Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Mary Beard is one of the world's best-known classicists, a brilliant academic with a rare gift for communicating with a wide audience through her witty blog and her fearless and penetrating reviews. In her new book, Confronting the Classics, Traditions, Adventures, and Innovations, she draws on 30 years of teaching and writing about Greek and Roman history to provide a panoramic portrait of the classical world. Mary Beard is a professor of classics at Cambridge University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning.
It's great to be with you.
What brought you down this path of, quote-unquote, confronting the classics?
For a long time, what I've wanted to get a chance to say to people is that it's not just that the classics are really interesting and the classics matter, but that somehow we need to kind of face up to them. We need to challenge them, engage with them, argue about them. I think people have a very passive view often of the classics. They think the classics are very virtuous, honourable, probably slightly dull, probably kind of good for you, but not something that you get up too close, look eyeball to eyeball, and have a good sort of argument about. And I wanted to say, look, this is slightly aggressive book. It's saying, you know, let's talk about it. Let's look at them. Let's look at them a bit more carefully. Not just be a bit cowed by the classics.
And that is really what it's ultimately about, is that talking about it. I mean, even if we are doing a self-examination and having a conversation with ourselves about what it means, is to open yourself up to that work.
Yes. You know, and in a way, okay, you know, the Greeks and Romans are long dead, but unless we're going to say that we're having some sort of chat, a conversation with them, an argument with them, their whole interest has gone. You know, that classical culture isn't something which is there just to be admired. I mean, some of it is admirable, some of it is very definitely not admirable, but it's there for us to engage with and to be a bit sort of, well, upfront about. And I think the front, the confronting, is quite important, really.
So how do you define the classical world?
Well, I think I define it in two ways. And I think the, you know, one way, but the slightly more boring way, is to say it is everything to do with the culture, art, language, history, philosophy of the ancient Greeks and Romans up to a certain date. And I think that's obviously part of it. But I think a more interesting definition of the classics is to say it's both about that and it's about all the conversations that we and our predecessors have already had about those traditions. So in a kind of way, we're looking at what happens between us and the ancient world. I mean, I'm interested in Dante because Dante is there in the Middle Ages engaging with Virgil. And I'm interested in, let's say, Richard Taylor and Elizabeth Burton. Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, because a nice Freudian slip, because they're there trying to think about Cleopatra. And so I'm interested not only in what happened a very long time ago, but I'm interested in all the things that have gone on in relation to the classical world between then and now. So I think it's a kind of richer, you know, Thomas Jefferson. You know, you can't really understand Thomas Jefferson and the American founding fathers if you don't understand a bit of the way they were engaging with Roman politics. That kind of, you know. So I've got a very, you know, a slightly imperialistic, all-encompassing definition, but it's one that works for me.
And whether it be Thomas Jefferson or Julius Caesar or Hannibal, you also are looking at what could be considered the common people, quote-unquote,
yeah,
of the millions of inhabitants of the Roman Empire, the slaves, the soldiers, the women. That's an important part of this as well.
Yes, I'm interested in saying, really, look, you know, there are a lot of very interesting, rich men in the classical tradition. They have a lot of interesting things to say. But one of the things that I want to do is also not throw those over, but I want to unpeel some of the debris from that has been covering up, you know, the women, the slaves, the poor people, the bakers and the hairdressers, you know, the people who are cleaning out the furnaces in the baths. Because actually what's interesting is that you can find out much more about those, and you can have a bit of a conversation with them too, if you know where to look. And one of the favourite bits I have in the book is where I talk about this absolutely extraordinary tomb monument put up by an ex-slave who became a very rich baker. And, you know, it's a marvellous monument where he built in the kind of shape of a bread oven and has loads of sculptures on it showing people making bread. And it's in a really conspicuous place in the city. And you see, here's a guy who's started little, he's made it big, he's writing himself into history absolutely successfully, because you go to this great tram terminus in Rome today and you still look at his tomb. So there's something very nice about being able to find out about and give some due honour, I think, to all the little people that made the Greek and Roman world go round.
Are all classics created equal in the sense of that looking at something that is considered archaic and inaccessible, that is there work that fits that definition?
Well, I think what's very interesting is how fashions change on this. You know, so people often say, look, so little survives from the ancient world. You know, so little writing in Latin and Greek survives. And you know, actually you say, sorry, you know, hang on. You know, there's probably more Latin and Greek surviving than any one person could read carefully in a lifetime. And I think what's very interesting is the way that different ages and different periods of history have found different things in different writers. I mean, you know, if we went back to the 19th century, we would all know Cicero's philosophical works. You know, here we've got 1st century BC Roman writing about duty and obligation, friendship and on growing old. Now, they were kind of the big hits, the absolute top sellers of the 19th century, and we don't read them very much now. Instead, we've discovered all kinds of things that the 19th century didn't look at very much. We take for granted that Euripides, the Athenian playwright Euripides, is a absolute, well, you know, one of the greatest dramatists that there has ever been. People in the 19th century thought he was really a bit racy and had much too much to say about women. And we've also, even more recently, recovered a whole tradition of Greek and Roman novels. I mean, people used to think that the novel was invented by Jane Austen. Well, actually, there are amazing stories of often romantic stories written in the Roman Empire, which we've just found again. So I think it's not a question of saying that there's anything which is irrevocably boring in ancient world, nothing that's irrevocably boring, but that rediscover and partly reinvent our top 10 as time goes by.
Let me talk a little bit about that reinvention. One of the exercises that I remember vividly from a literature classics class in college was taking one work and looking at the various interpretations and how different they can be. So talk to us a little bit about that interpretation and what we should look for and how we ultimately know we're getting the true meaning of the work and the author.
Well, I think we can never be quite certain that we're getting the true meaning of the work. And I think that's true of modern literature, and it's certainly true of classical literature, where we can't ever actually ask the author. But I think one of the things that marks out a really tremendous work of literature is the fact that it is something that we still want to debate. It's morality, what it's really trying to say is still something that it goes on feeling worth discussing. And I think a very obvious case of that would be Virgil's great epic poem, The Aeneid, telling the story of the foundation of Rome. And the centre of the Aeneid is the hero Aeneas, who is in the end going to end up founding at least the kind of prequel for the city of Rome in Italy. He's escaping from the destroyed city of Troy. And yet the character of Aeneas, the sense in which he's a hero, well, it's been debated since Virgil ceased to write, you know, in the end of the first century BC. And one of the things that modern audiences and modern readers have debated hugely about the character of Aeneas is his love affair with the Queen Dido. He goes, he's shipwrecked on the Carthage coast, he meets the Queen and Aeneas, partly orchestrated by the gods, fall in love. But in the end, Aeneas sees that he has to leave Dido because his destiny is to found the city of Rome. As Dido sees that he's going to go, she throws herself on the funeral pyre alive and burns to death. Now, the kind of sense of moral responsibility in that episode of, you know, was Aeneas just a bastard? Was he a male bastard? Was he someone who knew that actually a hero whose destiny was to found the city of Rome couldn't actually spend his life having a glorious love affair with a Carthaginian queen? You know, was Dido really desperately broken? Or was the suicide a histrionic event which, in a sense, was to curse and damn Aeneas forever? Now, nobody ever gets to the bottom of that, because the way it's written by Virgil is precisely to make you have to go on re-questioning and questioning again what you think about it. So I think that I'm never looking for the final answer, I think, in any of this. I'm looking to say, so what's the issue? What have we got to debate here? You know, why is that issue so gripping for us still? Why do my students still have, you can get them in a classroom and they'll still start to argue about Dido and Aeneas? So I think it's about the discussion, the conversation and the debate as much as anything else.
Mary Beard is the author of Confronting the Classics, Traditions, Adventures, and Innovations. The book is from Norton. Mary Beard, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. A delight.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book, Confronting the Classics, by Mary Beard. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.